Welcome. Inside Appalachia, I'm Jessica Lilly. While we're no stranger to flooding, June 23rd storms have ravaged parts of West Virginia on a historic level. Today, we bring you the voices from these hills. Like flood survivor Helen Hansen, a resident of Raynell, she was rescued by local volunteers.
The water was cold. It kept getting colder and colder. It was terrible, but the good Lord was with me.
Tragedy was avoided in Richwood, where native J.D. Estep helped to rescue almost 100 residents from a nursing and rehabilitation center.
I have never been more proud to be a Mountaineer or a citizen of West Virginia. People opened their yards, their homes, doing whatever we could do to get them out of that water.
And we'll hear from Carol Holmes, who says despite it all, she's staying in town.
I'm West Virginia tough and proud. Proud to be here. I don't want to live anywhere else.
Find out what it means to be West Virginia tough and more this week on this special episode of Inside Appalachia.
The rivers are swollen. We got a flood on our hands. Get out the buckets and the pots and the pans. Mama put the pictures in the old wooden boat. Billy get the baby in Mama's overcoat. There's high ground at Green by the old gristmill store. We can keep everybody dry if it don't rain no more. We got a flood on our hands. The rain's gonna keep coming down.
Welcome. Inside Appalachia, I'm Jessica Lilly. We're no stranger to flooding, but in West Virginia, some places are dealing with the aftermath of what some folks are calling the 1,000-year flood. It began with a rare event. A tornado touched down in Nicholas County, West Virginia, on the afternoon of Tuesday, June 21st. Rainstorms followed throughout the region, but nothing like what started to fall throughout a 22-county region on Thursday, June 23rd. By 7 that evening, the governor had declared a state of emergency in 44 counties. Within a tragic 24 to 36-hour period, at least 23 people had perished. Our family members, friends, neighbors, young and old. Thousands of homes were flooded, many of them destroyed. While the damage was widespread, experts say that without the Sutton Dam on the Elk River, the Summersville Dam on the Gauley, and the Bluestone Dam on the New, floods would have been even worse throughout southern West Virginia. Federal and state Homeland Security, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the Red Cross, the National Guard, local fire departments, police units, volunteer groups, way too numerous to name, and individuals all jumped in to help rescue, feed, and shelter. On today's show, we're going to hear from the people and communities devastated by this flood and hear some harrowing stories. We'll start in White Sulphur Springs. The town in Greenbrier County saw some of the worst flood damage. The town is in the southeastern border of West Virginia, about 250 miles from Washington, D.C. Ashley Thomas of Fayetteville is one of the volunteers who was out all night rescuing people by boat in White Sulphur Springs.
Total annihilation. The whole town is in shambles.
Susie Rock says she and her friend were stranded for about 5 hours Thursday night in a two-story home in town. Susie says the waters rose too quickly for them to leave in their cars.
And it came up within 10 minutes it was up. And we walked into the house and it started coming in her house, and her cat was underneath the back porch, and we could hear him screaming, and we heard him drown. And my cat was in my house, so I imagine she's drowned too.
The two escaped floodwaters by climbing inside the bucket of a front-end loader that was operated by one of the local rescue teams. As Susie was being transported to a local shelter in downtown White Sulphur, she says there were scenes of chaos.
And the houses were floating by. I mean, these huge houses were just floating by. I'm going, there goes another house, there goes another house.
Susie was at an emergency shelter in town wearing a shirt somebody had given her and a blanket wrapped around her body because all of her clothes were damaged in the floods. She has no plans to rebuild her home. She says she doesn't have home flood insurance.
I don't know what to do. I think I'm going to have to rent a room over at one of the elderly apartments in Lewisburg.
Susie is one of thousands of people who don't have a place to live right now, and the economy in the region is taking yet another blow. One of the largest employers in Greenbrier County is the historic Greenbrier Resort. The hotel was built in the 1850s and housed the secret bunker for the United States Congress during the Cold War. Today, the once five-star ornate hotel is also coated in mud. The floods carved a path of destruction unseen in generations. The resort's owners say it may take a couple of months to reopen. Last week, 300 flood victims found shelter in the rooms, and the hotel was closed for business while it fed and sheltered the disaster refugees. The PGA Golf Tournament, the Greenbrier Classic that was scheduled to begin July 7th, is now canceled. Other events have also been affected by the flooding. The community of Alderson canceled what would have been the 55th annual 4th of July celebration. It's boasted on the webpage as West Virginia's largest Independence Day celebration. Meanwhile, up in the central part of the state, in the Nicholas County town of Richwood, rescue teams were having trouble getting into town as mudslides were pelting down the mountains. My colleague Kara Lofton of West Virginia Public Broadcasting was in Richwood Thursday night during search and rescue efforts. Kara took some truly compelling photographs from the scene. The next day, she described what she saw with West Virginia Public Broadcasting's executive director, Scott Finn.
So the roads are pretty bad. It took me about 4 hours to get from Charleston to Nicholas County. When I was about 3 miles out from Richwood, I hit a mudslide that completely obscured the road. Waited for an hour, actually saw an ambulance on one side take a kid from Richwood who had to be carried over the mudslide to get out of town to the ambulance, to the hospital. I actually ended up getting a ride once I walked over the mudslide. State troopers were kind enough to take me down the mountain. When you get in, I mean, it's quiet. There's absolutely no power, only a few generators running. The town seemed real devastated, almost like a hurricane or something had hit.
You know, we've seen your pictures, spectacular pictures at wvpublic.org. It looks almost like there are these huge boulders that are in the middle of the main street. I mean, it's just a sign of the power of the water that rushed through town.
Yeah, so one of the things that really struck me is it actually churned up the road itself. So if you're going through the parking lot, some of that, actually, I think the one that was most shocking to me is at the school, you see pieces of the road in and around the sign and in the yard of the school. There's actually one point where a school window got completely blown out. And so there is just, so the classroom is totally exposed to the outside elements in another place. As we were driving out, you could see water still pouring down the steps of a house as it ran through the house and out into the street. They said it was several feet high in some homes and people had to be evacuated in town. But I spent most of my time at the Baptist church where they had evacuated the nursing home to, partially because I'm a health reporter and I was curious what that looked like. It was pretty shocking. They had done the best that they could do, but by the time I had gotten there, mudslides had cut off Richwood from both sides. So they're really on their own. About an hour or two before I got there, the Red Cross had been able to get through with cots. So they had nursing home residents. I mean, you're talking about, you know, really old, really sick people on pews and cots all throughout this church. And they're basically just waiting for the sun to rise so that they can move them to a more appropriate location.
Kara, I know you're a relatively new reporter. Had you ever seen flooding like this before?
I have never seen flooding like this before, and I've certainly never seen mudslides like this before that are hugely powerful. You see places where there was a camper and an ice machine, like the kind that you see out of a Go-Mart, that are just smashed together. I mean, the amount of force behind this, we are talking about fatalities, but I think it's a huge blessing that it hasn't been. There haven't been more fatalities than we've heard about.
You know, speaking of that, you talked a little bit about, you had a picture of a first responder and a baby. How did you, putting the baby into an ambulance, it looked like? Talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, so from what I heard, the kid had dislocated his elbow. The mom was able to get the kid up the mountain, but the ambulance was not able to get over the mud, obviously. So the first responder that you see carrying that kid, walks through the mudslide, and since I walked through it too, it's pretty deep. I mean, you know, you're looking at a foot maybe in places where you're going to sink down and it's not real steady.
And if you look at that photo, there's such tenderness in that man's eyes as he's carrying this little baby into the ambulance. Carol Lofton, thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
By Friday afternoon, most of the water in Richwood had receded and people needed help. Traffic was steady inside City Hall where victims could find food, water, and some supplies. That's where I found Carol Holmes and her daughter.
Carol, did you get everything you need, honey?
You know where we are. You need to come back.
Need mop.
Okay, if we get some, honey, I'll make sure that I get somebody to bring you one, okay?
Oh, I need a mop so
okay.
bad.
Okay, all right.
What you need?
She needs a mop.
A mop?
I have one in my car.
Mop's about this big round, yeah. And I've got it wore out.
Okay, I've got one in my car. Kate's got one for you.
Kate's got one for you.
All right.
Thanks. Was your home flooded, ma'am?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
How are you? Do you have people to help you sort of clean out?
My son and my grandson, we had to rip up the carpets. And there was water about this deep all the way through my house. All of it.
Mud everywhere.
I'm 75 years old and I've never experienced this in my whole life. And it's rough. It's hard. I'm about to cry myself to death.
How long have you lived in that home?
20 years.
20 years.
Yeah. And it's been flooded twice. Now I'm going to move.
Are you?
Yep.
Do you know where you're going to go?
Here somewhere in Richwood. Yeah. Up on a hill. I live by the river.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Were you there when the home started flooding?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were you thinking when that happened?
Well, I was sitting in a rocking chair, and I had two little dogs, and I was talking on the phone to my grandson. And I said, "It is really raining here, Michael." And my other son came out, and he said, "Mom, look." And here I have a stone wall all around my house, and it just run right over top of the wall. Them great big tars that goes on tractors and everything was floating down in my yard. Had a big, beautiful garden. It's all gone.
Mm. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. But I'm still here. My kids are still here.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that matters.
I'm sure there were a lot of memories in that house. How do you feel about letting go of some of those places that those memories were?
You just have to sew it out and forget it. That's all you can do. I throw out stuff, like I sew a lot. I had to throw out a lot of cloth. And, I make quilts and everything. I just had to throw it away. Nothing you can do.
They say that Richwooders are tough as knots, he said. Do you think that's true?
I am, I'll tell you that. I am, I'm tough. I'm brought up tough. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I wish you the best. Thank you for sharing your story. And I hope you get that mop.
Oh, me too. I need a mop so bad.
In the midst of the chaos of people coming in and out to get supplies, water, and food, Carol's daughter steps over to explain that the family is no stranger
to tough
mountain. Times.
It didn't get me, but, she's worked hard all of her life. She's had a rough life. And what she had was special.
She's had a rough life.
Don't cry. Can't help it. It's sad. I manage. I raised five kids by myself. Well, six kids. I raised a grandson, too. Yeah, I'm West Virginia tough.
Yeah, she is.
There you go.
She is a tough woman.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. West Virginia tough and proud. Proud to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me too.
I don't want to live anywhere else. No way.
Is it hard to stay here sometimes?
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry, honey. But I had the prettiest garden and flowers. All gone, but, they're just things. It's hard. Hard.
She said you had a hard life. Was it raising five kids on your own?
Well, my husband drank a lot. Blacked my eyes every weekend. So, yeah, I did. But, you see, I raised him.
Yes, ma'am.
The oldest is 56 and the youngest is 48. You got to have willpower. That's what you have to have. Just, you got to do it, and you do it, you know? Yeah.
Where does your strength come from to pull out of those things?
My mom was old when I was born, and my dad. And I was the youngest of 10 kids. And I just, I saw my brothers and sisters go through stuff, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do my own. And I did. And I did. Yeah. None of my kids are in jail or nothing. I think I've done a good job.
And I can tell she does too.
She does. They all do. They're all just like her.
I didn't mean to keep you again. Thank you so much.
Oh, honey, I don't care to talk to you. You're
thank
so nice.
You. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. It's about hot. Oh, it's hot in here.
It is hot in here.
Goodness.
It is. And dark. Just outside of City Hall, things were calm but busy. That's where I met up with Richwood native Alan Rose. So where are we standing and what are we looking at?
Okay, right now we're standing in the City Hall parking lot. Right now we're looking over at the Cherry River Plaza. And that's it's got our Dollar General. It once had our Foodland, our Rite Aid pharmacy. And it was pretty swamped. The water was supposed to be really deep in there. They're saying it's going to be a little while until they're able to open again. And that's pretty much our main source of groceries and food for the area. Otherwise, we have to go all the way to Walmart. That's a 24-mile drive one way. So you can imagine that'll be pretty rough.
So you said that's a Rite Aid and a Dollar General, which is your main food source. And the water came in from that side?
Yes, the river is just on the other side of that, past the high school. I can show you that later. And it just cascaded through the parking lot. You can see the water line here under the Foodland sign. It looks to be at least 3 feet high from here.
Emergency officials were setting up floodlights to prepare for the evening. Like so many places across the state, the town of Richwood was left without water, electricity, and even phone lines. Residents say water came gushing into the valley from the mountains on Thursday, turning over fences and leaving a thick layer of mud on everything, even the high school football field. That's where I found 14-year-old Hannah Addington.
I live in Nettie, which is right beside Richwood, and I've went to Richwood since sixth grade. And it's really devastating.
Hannah is a cheerleader and plans to cheer for the Lumberjacks in her first year of high school this fall. While standing in front of a broken gate to the Richwood High School athletic field, Hannah explains that she was in Greenbrier County when the floods hit.
And we talked to a guy up there and he said, I'm not going to tell you all what to do, but if it was me, I'd get out. And so when we tried to get out, White Sulphur was closed because the bridge there had flooded, so there was no possible way to get out. And then when we tried to get back to our camp, the road back to our camp was flooded. So we were stuck in a 2-mile stretch to drive back and forth for a long time.
Richwooders, as they call themselves, are no stranger to flooding. According to a website called richwooders.com, in 1954, a flood washed away cars, damaged homes, and businesses. They called it the Superflood. Let's listen to a recording of Gene Ward, taken right after the flood. It's a little hard to hear since it was recorded back in 54, but we wanted to share because the woman explains that it was difficult to be heard from Richwood as she called for help.
I contacted Washington. Contacted Charleston, and our wives kept breaking up so badly that I didn't know whether they were going to be able to help us or not, but they assured me that they would do what they can, and then our wire went off, and from then on it was just up to them.
Being able to communicate is something that many of us take for granted, but even today it is kind of hard to be heard from Richwood since cell service is kind of spotty. Still, the images from 1954 are similar to the flood this year. But word did spread much faster in 2016, thanks to the internet and social media. Former Councilman Jeremy Rose was quick to take a few pictures and post to his Facebook page. The images showed floodwaters blanketing the town of Richwood. And in town, the water carried debris through alleys and even gushed into the Nicholas County Nursing and Rehabilitation Center. Alan Rose showed us around the outside of the building where sandbags, abandoned wheelchairs, and thick mud rippled in the parking lot. Alan volunteered to help with the evacuation of the almost 100 residents.
We had the buses coming in, filling them up, and it got to the point where there was no room on the buses, so we had to pull people out onto the grassy bank just above that wall there. Probably a good 15 or 20 people we had to pull up and over that hillside, lifting wheelchairs above our heads with water up to our waist, debris like you see here, just flowing down the alleyway.
Now, we're talking about people who are strapped to wheelchairs, elderly, many of them immobile.
What kind of things were they saying to you as you were helping them?
Oh, many people were panicked about water. Some people spoke about childhood memories of floods of the past. Many people, the biggest complaint was, I can't swim. Yeah. And
what would you say to them? They'd say, I can't swim, I can't swim. And you'd say, what would you say?
Oh, I would tell them, we're not swimming. I'm big enough to float for both of us, you know. No, we're just waiting. It's a free swim for Richwood, you know. And most of the jokes and everything that all the volunteers were using helped calm people down more than denial of the situation. You get them smiling and everything, and that really calms people down.
The nursing home evacuation happened on Thursday, before the National Guard arrived. My colleagues and I drove through other parts of Richwood and found the park and Little League field still soaked and holding water. In town, a thick layer of mud squished around my rain boots as I turned to take a picture. And as a car rolled past me, I recognized the man driving. He smiled on the double take when he realized it's me, a familiar face. It was J.D. Estep, a former classmate at school. He whipped his car around and pulled in beside me to give me a hug. He was one of the workers who helped with the evacuation. He explained that he was proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with his neighbors to help his residents.
I have never been more proud to be a Mountaineer or a citizen of West Virginia than I was in the middle of that disaster. People opened their yards, their homes. Wherever we could put residents, that's where they put them. They were out there helping us, getting them across the road, doing whatever we could do to get them out of that water. It was horrifying and incredible.
We keep hearing that story. It's kind of what us Mountaineers is what we do.
Absolutely. For the last 2 days, I just keep hearing John F. Kennedy over and over in my head. The sun might not always shine on West Virginia, but its people always do. And unfortunately, it takes a disaster to remind us of that, but that spirit never goes away. And as soon as someone you know is in need, everybody is there. And you can't put a price on that. It's invaluable.
So I take it that's what you like most about living here,
yeah.
The people.
You can't buy that. You can have all the money in the world, and if your neighbors aren't going to help you, then you're literally up a creek, you know?
And at the same time, you know, we were talking before about the revitalization efforts here in Richwood. You know, there's a question of whether or not Richwood will be able to rebuild, if there's going to be an energy to rebuild, but you know, some of that was already in motion. What do you think? Do you think Richwood can rebuild?
I think that the citizens of Richwood want more than anything to see this community back to what it used to be. At one time, this was one of the biggest places in this whole state you could come to. There were shops here, but that was when mining was big. For the last 20 years, there's been a conversation about revitalizing this community, and steps have been taken. We've got some of the most beautiful murals you've ever seen painted on old buildings that have been gone into disuse. There are sculpture gardens. There are little planters everywhere. Like, the people have tried. The problem is you have a generational divide. You have people in my demographic and younger, 35 and below, who are full of energy and full of ideas and ready and willing and wanting to do something. But then you have the older generation who has money, who has power. They're happy with the way things are, and they're not in a hurry to change them because they're okay. And that is the reality of Richwood. We would love to see all of this cleaned up and revitalized and brought back to life, but we don't have that control. Citizens of Richwood don't control this economy.
The nursing home was one of the main employers of Richwood. The parent company, Platinum Healthcare, LLC, is based in Illinois. I checked back in with J.D. a few days later. He says he plans to move out west to look for a job. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to travel to Greenbrier County, where we hear about two children who were stuck on the opposite side of the floodwaters from their family. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly.
I feel the shadows now upon me, and red angels beckon me. Before I go, dear Christian brother, won't you come and sing for me? Sing those hymns we sang together, that plain little church with the benches all worn. How dear to my heart, how precious the moment we stood shaking hands and singing our song. My burden is heavy, my way has grown weary. I have traveled a road that is long, and it would ease this poor heart, dear brother, if you'd come and sing one song. Sing those hymns we sang together, that plain little church with benches all worn. How dear to my heart, how precious the moment we stood shaking hands and singing our song.
We just heard a story of heroism as workers and volunteers rescued close to 100 nursing and rehabilitation residents from floodwaters. This next story is about how floodwaters separated children from family. In western Greenbrier County, part of Route 60 near Rupert was completely submerged underwater during the flood. For over 24 hours, 3-year-old Layla and her 1.5-year-old brother Landon were separated from their family. Roxy Todd was there Friday afternoon as the story was unfolding.
Sandra Cox was at work on Thursday when the storms hit, and her grandchildren were with their babysitter in Rupert. The road back to Rupert became impassable, and the children's babysitter's home was flooded. They relocated to a safer location, but the children still didn't have their family back. To make matters worse, the babysitter started having asthma attacks. Stuck on the other side of the water, Sandra didn't know what to do.
And they're just scared and crying and wondering where Nana's at and Mommy and everybody.
Sandra's brother-in-law, Kevin, spoke with the National Guard rescuer who is helping residents across the water.
She wants to make sure that y'all hang on to them, take care of them.
Oh, we got jackets. We got jackets that'll fit them. Nope.
We'll get them.
The enormous truck took off through the water, searching for the toddlers. An hour later, two National Guardsmen brought a truckload of about 10 people across the floodwaters. One of them climbed out of the truck carrying two frightened children, Layla and Landon, and handed them to their grandmother, Sandra Cox.
I'm glad you got them back.
Oh, thank you.
How does it feel?
I am too. It feels awesome.
There were other tearful reunions at the waterside. About 30 evacuees spent the evening grilling out at a makeshift shelter at Amwell Baptist Church. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd in Greenbrier County.
Tragically, not everyone was rescued. Of the 23 deaths that have been reported at this point, a 4-year-old boy drowned Thursday night in Jackson County. The boy's body was found the next morning. Clark Davis reported from the scene.
Rescue officials from Ravenswood, Jackson County, the West Virginia Division of Natural Resources, and other surrounding areas came to Ravenswood Friday morning with the hope of finding the 4-year-old boy.
Heavenly Father, we come to thee this morning, dear God in heaven. We humbly pray for you, dear God in heaven, that you watch over the emergency workers, dear God in heaven, as they go through this task.
Groups split up, checking along Utah Creek, where the boy first went into the water. They also investigated the area where Utah empties into Sandy Creek. After searching for a couple of hours, the body was found. Bobby Bibby is the public information officer for the Ravenswood Fire Department.
And we started at Sand Creek with the crew coming back inland. And from the last point they saw him yesterday, we started a crew. Hopefully they meet him in the middle. And one of the crews on the Utah side found him in the creek that was last seen.
Bibby said the body was found about 200 yards from where he entered the water. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Clark Davis.
On Saturday, President Obama had issued a federal disaster declaration for 3 counties, though the designation would eventually extend to 10 counties. At this point, many West Virginians were still just trying to process the trauma of the flood and all that had been lost.
Walking down a dirt road on my way back home, looking for a place I can call my own. Spent too many years trying to find my way, and I'm taking the dirt road home today. Taking the dirt road home.
This song is by a Greenbrier County musician named John Wyatt. His home in Raynell was hit pretty badly by the storm. He was okay and he got out in time. The town was largely evacuated. When floodwaters began to recede on Saturday, John was cleaning out his home when Roxy Todd stopped by. 2 doors down from John, Roxy also met up with Mr. Fred Fryer, a pastor of the Sewell Valley Baptist Church, who told his story about how he was rescued.
Fred Fryer's front lawn was covered in mud, and he was carrying most of he and his wife's furniture, clothes, and personal belongings out to the curb. Most of it had been destroyed. But he had a smile on his face, because, he said, there isn't a lot you can do at this point but laugh a little and remember that you're alive.
My wife and I stayed, and it was up to her chest and up to here on me. And we kept calling 911 4 times, and they said they'd send somebody. So finally, some of our church members come across this mountain here and said, y'all need to go down and get these people.
Emergency responders were dealing with evacuations all over Greenbrier County that night. Volunteers came to help from all over the state. Fred's friends found 2 guys who had brought their personal John boat. Fred didn't know if anyone was coming. It was dark. The water was up to his chest.
Me and my wife were standing at the front door of the house looking out, and we had the door open. And this lady here was standing at the front door, and she couldn't get her door open because the water was so high.
The woman who was trapped was 79-year-old Helen Hansen, who lived alone across the street from Fred.
Were you praying a lot?
Yes, constantly, all day long. I finally decided when it started to get dark, Lord, you have completely forgotten about me.
Then, around 11 at night, Fred saw the John boat moving down the street towards them.
So I hollered at her, and I said, hold on, the boat's coming, the boat's coming.
Fred says there were so many people who were scared and stuck in their homes. Not all of them survived.
You heard people hollering, help, help, you know, that night. Older people that needed some help and knew that if they didn't get it, they were done for. Matter of fact, Helen Hansen said, if I hadn't seen your flashlight and you telling me that the boat was coming, and she said it was up here to my shoulders and I was ready to give up.
I was just going to let it go ahead and put me under the water because I knew that's what's going to happen. And it's not a very good feeling.
It's probably very cold.
The water was cold, and it kept getting colder on my legs. On my legs, it kept getting colder and colder, and it was terrible. But the good Lord was with me.
Not long after Helen considered giving up, the volunteers arrived. Fred Fryer told them to rescue Helen Hansen first. They carried her into their boat.
They had to help me. They had to lift my legs over into the boat because I could hardly use my legs.
Neither Helen nor Fred found out the names of the 2 guys who rescued them. If it hadn't been for them, they both say they don't know if they would have been saved in time.
You know, people in West Virginia is just good like that. And they're ready to help. And some of them don't even know you, but they're ready to help.
In the days after the flood, Fred and his wife and Helen Hansen have been staying with members of Fred's church who live in Meadow Bridge. Like most of the displaced people from Raynell, they're waiting to see what happens once FEMA arrives.
So, you know what? Things are looking up. It just, God is so good to us. And he said he would work things out to our good. And I don't know how he's going to do that, but he's going to do it.
A day after this interview, Fred received some good news. He and his wife, Kathy, were offered a temporary home in Raynell, owned by Helen Hansen's family. Helen plans to go there, too, and the three of them will be able to stay there as long as it takes to rebuild their homes. Most of Helen and Fred's neighbors also lost most of their possessions. A few doors down, I meet Norma Hennessy, who's joined by her two sisters and a nephew. They're helping her clean out her home. Norma came back to West Virginia a few years ago to help take care of her mother. She was staying with her mom outside Raynell on Thursday when the flood came, and she couldn't get back into town. The entire downtown was submerged in water. She finally got back to see what was left of her home on Friday.
Yesterday afternoon, we finally got in town. Yeah, I just opened the door and shut it and went back out. I just couldn't deal with it at the time. So.
And then what?
Now we're back to deal with it.
Most of Norma's possessions were ruined after soaking in mud and water for a day. Her family was there to help her as she tried to get as much of the mud out of the house as possible. It stank, and everything was covered with a thick, brown, soupy mess.
When we opened it up, everything, it's like the water pushed it all in the middle. Went all the way around like a swirl and all this. That we just moved it back so we could get in there to clean some stuff out. I mean, you can go in and look if you want. If you want to take pictures or whatever.
Will you show me?
Go. Well, just go. It's only a two-bedroom apartment. Come on, it just,
So I wade through the mud into Norma's home. Her fridge is on its side, pushed over from the power of the water. She thinks she might be able to salvage her kitchen table, but everything waist high is ruined.
It was so bad. Here's the door. It took the door off and the frame.
Her front door shows a water mark about 4.5 feet.
See, the water went all the way up to where the mailbox is. See there, you can see there. See the line?
The water also ruined Norma's new car. She says she bought it 2 weeks ago.
Somehow or other, it raised the trunk, and then the airbag inside went off. I mean, you can see, you can open the door, it's unlocked, all the dirt in there.
Mud has filled most of the inside of the car. The back looks like it's been rear-ended by a tidal wave.
It's unreal how water actually got inside.
Norma rents her home, a one-story, two-bedroom apartment. She likes it here and doesn't want to move. She has congestive lung issues and has trouble climbing stairs. The thought of finding a new home seems too daunting. She plans to stay with her mom in the nearby town of Bellwood until her landlord can do what he can to restore the apartment. If she can, she plans to move back. Norma's nephew, Jamie Williams, came from Ohio to help her and other residents of Raynell. On Friday, he worked with neighbors to help rescue pets which had been stranded.
I waded up to about my chin in water to get the dogs out. And the people were just, it was amazing. There was cats in trees. I came out with a ferret on my shoulder. And it wasn't just me, it was the whole town.
Jamie says he has a construction job in Ohio to get back to. But this week, he plans to stay in Raynell to help with the cleanup effort. He says the town is in turmoil. And he can't leave his family in turmoil. And he says family is the most important thing to him right now. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Roxy Todd in Raynell.
What has happened down here? Is the wind now changed? Clouds roll in from the north and it start to rain. Rain real hard and rain for a real long time. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline. River rolls all day, the river rolls all night. Some people got lost in the flood. Some people got away all right. River have busted through, clear down to Plaquemine. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs, to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Today, we're listening to Appalachians tell us the stories from the devastating flood that struck West Virginia Thursday, June 23rd. We've heard from folks in Greenbrier County and Nicholas County. Next, we go to Kanawha County, to a town about 25 miles from Charleston, the capital city. Clendenin only has about 1,200 people, and 6 people died from that region. Several businesses were damaged. Even the iconic Dairy Queen collapsed when moving water swept through the town. West Virginia Speaker of the House Tim Armstead represents this district.
This is a wonderful little town, and I think most of the people here want to stay. And they've lived here. I mean, most of us that live up in Elk River area have lived here. Generations of our family have lived here. And people don't want to leave, so we're hoping that we can put it back together and work hard to keep everybody here.
The human cost, Armstead says, of people leaving the area could be much larger than the monetary one. So some do want to stay, but will they find the means to rebuild? Our health reporter, Kara Lofton, visited Clendenin. On Saturday, she talked with FEMA representatives and found that while the federal government had approved some disaster assistance, at that point, the vast majority of rescue, cleanup, and support had been provided by the local communities.
Marsha Larch lived in the same Clendenin, West Virginia home for 50 years, ever since she got married at the age of 16.
And I've never seen water like this before in my life.
Larch stands on what used to be her back deck, looking out onto the river at least 35 feet below. On the night of the flood, Larch fled to higher ground in her camper as water rushed into her home. By the time the water receded, more than a day later, stinking mud covered the surface of everything, recycling, furniture, and even clothes that had washed out from the living room inside.
I didn't have no flood insurance because they always told us, you know, it never comes this way, so.
She leans over the deck and points at a support pole sliding slowly toward the river in the thick mud. It's just a matter of time, she says, before the whole house collapses onto the bank.
So you're just abandoning the home?
I'm abandoning. I can't do nothing, you know. You're retired, you can't, you know. I worked for 36 years for the power company, and I retired and worked on my home and got it all ready, and now it's gone.
Drive down Larch's Street, and you'll see that she is not the only one who has lost everything. Piles of mud-encrusted furniture litter front lawns like some kind of perverse yard sale.
You'll go from what looks to be normal everyday houses just fine to complete destruction, just foundations left with nothing but mud.
That's Les Mitchell of the West Virginia FEMA Urban Search and Rescue Team.
We've been doing wide area searches in the area, just looking for any individuals that may still be trapped within their structure.
FEMA approved aid to 3 West Virginia counties Saturday, but for the past 3 days, most of the search and rescue and disaster relief has been provided by locals. Captain Will Hargis is with the West Virginia National Guard.
So that was, you know, the challenge is you got folks that couldn't get out or that got injured, and you know, we're still trying to find a way with first responders, us backing them up, you know, just trying to find a way to get to people, but it was just water everywhere.
He points at a stop sign they used to gauge whether the Guard's low-medium tactical vehicles could clear the rising water. They couldn't. He says they ended up using swiftwater rescue crews to access those trapped by the flood. Others were pulled from their homes by neighbors like Joe Snyder, who got folks out using fishing boats.
Well, I got Betty Blackwell out, but I could carry her out. It wasn't as deep, and this was deeper, and I had to put them in the boat and bring them.
Most of the water began to recede Saturday morning. Now, all that's left is a coating of mud that smells strongly of feces from overflowed sewer lines. Marsha Larch says she holds out hope that FEMA will help her rebuild her home. She says she had just finished renovations that she looked forward to enjoying in retirement.
But, you know, things happen.
In the meantime, she says, she will take the camper, what she can salvage from her home, and relocate.
For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton in Clendenin, West Virginia.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from the Benedum Foundation. We've heard from folks in 3 counties in the show, Greenbrier, Nicholas, and Kanawha. These were the counties that were clearly the hardest hit and were the first to be declared federal disasters by Saturday. Additional counties got the disaster declaration throughout the following week, including Clay, Fayette, Monroe, Roan, and Summers, bringing the total counties declared a federal disaster up to 10. This means these counties qualify for federal assistance from FEMA. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin called the June 23rd flood the worst in a century for some parts of the state. But it certainly wasn't the first time a flood has devastated communities in West Virginia. The majority of climate scientists predict we might see more intense rainstorms like the ones that struck the state last week. Jessica Moore is a senior geologist with the West Virginia Geological and Economic Survey.
While this event is extreme and it is extremely catastrophic, it is not necessarily abnormal in West Virginia's history. And this is due in part to the very nature of our state. The hills and hollows help to shape weather patterns as they cross the land. The largest event on record occurred on July 18, 1889. Rockport, a town just south of Parkersburg, experienced 19 inches of rain in 2 hours and 10 minutes. And it's known most commonly as the Johnstown flood.
In that horrific flood back in the 1880s, 2,209 died. According to a book written about the flood, a body of water moved into the valley with the force of Niagara Falls, carrying with it accumulated debris, which included houses, barns, animals, and people, dead and alive. Jessica Moore says that from a geological perspective, it's not clear whether the flooding like what West Virginia saw this year is a result of climate change.
What I will say is that when I look at this event in context, where it hit, I think that there is an explanation that may be more homegrown than we're seeing something that is abnormal. And when you look at during this storm where you had reports of extreme weather, you had flash flooding around Richwood and you had extreme precipitation in White Sulphur Springs. There's about 30 miles difference between those two locations. And the topography could not be more different. To the north, we're calling it the birthplace of rivers. To the south, you have the Greenbrier Valley. And thanks to erosion of the Greenbrier limestone, it is a very wide, broad valley. So you have this storm that half of it is trying to climb the mountain. And in order for a storm to climb a mountain, it has to release precipitation. And this is why you see the flash flooding there. Meanwhile, the other half of this storm is kind of business as usual coming down the valley. And this location also has an extensive network of caves. So not only do you have surface water, you have subsurface water, all flowing to the same location at the same time.
Jessica Moore is a senior geologist with the West Virginia Geological and Economic Survey. You can hear an extended conversation with her on the latest episode of the Front Porch Podcast. You can find it, as well as dozens of photographs from the flood this year, on our website at wvpublic.org. And on next week's show, we'll talk a bit more about some of the possible causes of the flood last week, and we'll look more at whether climate change could lead to more flash flooding in our region.
Ain't got nothing to get. That's all we really need. You can't know the weather, but you can sow new seed. No life is spared to the ones who blame a God without mercy. Cry without shame, like Noah of old was put to the test to see if his faith was deeper than the rest. We got a flood on our hands, the rain's gonna keep coming down.
This week, we've heard Appalachian stories of tragedy, resilience, and hope. With such devastation, a question many of us have been asking is, can these small communities rebuild? What does it take to come back from flooding so devastating? Well, one community in southern West Virginia that was in the spotlight for massive flooding in 2001 was spared by the June 23rd flood. But I wanted to find out how things were going, so I made a trip to Wyoming County, to Mullins, my hometown, to talk with Charlie Feller, an insurance salesman in town. Has Mullins bounced back?
Mullins took a severe lick in the 2001 flood, and although parts of it have bounced back, some of it will never come back. Some of the buildings are still unoccupied from the flood. And I don't think it will be back to what it once was, not only because of the flood, but because of the coal industry situation the way it is. There's just not as many job opportunities and those type activities.
Well, and while many of the businesses did come back here in Mullins, many of the people decided to leave. Tell us about that.
Well, the vast majority stayed and tried to work through it. But again, similar to the businesses, the people that did leave were retired. They lived near the creeks or streams, the Guyandotte River, Slab Fork, that routinely had high water, and I believe they were just tired of dealing with it. So they moved to other areas because I think in the back of their mind they had contemplated that anyway.
How important is the attitude when you're talking about total devastation of a flood like this?
It's very important to have that positive attitude because after the first week or two after the flood, downtown Mullins looked like a third world country that had just gone through a war. All the windows of the businesses were broken out. Some of the floors had collapsed into the basements. So to look at it initially, you'd think it would be almost impossible to recover. But slowly and surely, everybody band together and began working together, again, sharing information and resources to make it happen. And now most of it's all back to normal.
Any word of advice to those folks in Raynell or other parts of the state?
Just keep in touch, keep persevering, because make a determination that if you do want to go back into your business, there are resources there to put you back in business, to help you make it through all this and be back and thriving as you were prior to the flood.
Next week, we'll take a deeper look into the process of flood recovery in Wyoming County, and we'll try to see what lessons those communities may have for people trying to bounce back from this year's flood. Since the downpour ravaged communities in West Virginia on June 23rd, residents are trying to clean up and salvage homes, memories, and lives. This flood comes at a time when many West Virginia families are struggling because of the state's poor economy. West Virginia is suffering from skyrocketing unemployment and dwindling population. We've rebuilt from floods before, but you can't help but wonder what will happen next. As one of the flood survivors, Carol Holmes in Richwood, told me the Friday after the flood, you got to have willpower to go on. Carol and I also talked about what it meant to be West Virginia strong. Do you have a story from the flood you'd like to share? What about some of the things you'd like to see come to places like Richwood, Raynell, Clendenin, or White Sulphur Springs that may help these towns bounce back? Send us a tweet at InAppalachia, and next week we'll read some of them on our show as we continue to follow this story and share the voices of Appalachia. So till next week, keep your chin up, West Virginia, and thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia. Music in today's show was provided by Randy Newman, Larry Gross, and Joe Ely, as heard on Mountain Stage. Other music was from Alan Cathead Johnston, Larry Dowling, and Amanda Watkins. Our producer is Roxy Todd. Suzanne Higgins edited our show this week. Our executive producer is Jesse Wright. Our audio mixer is Xander Alloy. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Find us on Twitter at InAppalachia or at Jessica Y. Lilly. You can also address your letters to Inside Appalachia in care of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, 600 Capitol Street, Charleston, West Virginia, 25301. The Inside Appalachia podcast is available on iTunes, Downcast, and at wvpublic.org. I'm Jessica Lilly. Inside Appalachia is a news and public affairs production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We all miss someone, gone for now, gone forever, whatever kind of gone, we never break, no, we stay strong.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.